We're live and we're local. It's a Juno afternoon on Wednesday, February 28th, 2018, last day of the month. I'm your host, Shelley Delaney. On today's show, we'll get a preview of this month's first Friday at Shoofly with Lynn Shell. We'll talk with musician Jeffrey Steele here in town as part of the Northern Lights Country Concert Series. We'll learn about Dr. Seuss's birthday Read Across America celebration, and we'll get our weekly Eagle Crest update with Jeff Clow. Those interviews, plus national native news and bird note, some music, and more right here on a Juno afternoon. Weather for the rest of today is partly cloudy with lows around 20, and there's a high wind warning issued for tonight until tomorrow at 11 p.m., so batten down the hatches. National Native News is next.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Montana's governor declared a state of emergency Tuesday for three reservations after a series of storms. Nikki Ouellette of Montana Public Radio reports.
The emergency declaration covers the Blackfeet, Fort Belknap, and Northern Cheyenne reservations. It frees up equipment and funds and extends hours for fuel delivery. The declaration is retroactive to February 14th. Robert DeRozier, incident commander for the Blackfeet Nation, says the reservation has seen more than two straight weeks of blizzard weather.
We've been ordering up some more extra resources. We've got loaders and graders and snow blowers, snow plows coming from every direction. So we've been very thankful for that. The snow amounts are just phenomenal. This is going to be a winter we talk about for quite some time.
The Blackfeet Nation declared its own state of emergency January 4th. Parts of the reservation have received 50 more inches of snow than normal, and strong winds have blown snow into 20-foot drifts. Roads have closed intermittently, stranding residents in outlier communities. Food and firewood are in short supply, even with a massive donation effort from other parts of the state. Reverend Calvin Hill of the Blackfeet United Methodist Parish in Browning says a handful of stranded travelers have been staying at the church, which opened an emergency shelter with the American Red Cross last week.
We also are doing daily feeds, breakfast if people need it, dinner if people need it, and luncheon if people need it. And then with the first responders, we've got that meal box that we send out with the first responders. And as much firewood as the first responders can take with them, they take that also.
Schools have struggled to keep their doors open. Hart Butte School has been closed for 12 of the past 14 school days. For National Native News, I'm Nikki Ouellette.
A Montana university has resolved a discrimination complaint filed last year by a Native American student group. Montana Public Radio's Edward O'Brien has more.
Montana State University Northern and the Sweetgrass Society student group signed on to the agreement, which settles the complaint alleging racial discrimination and First Amendment violations at the school. Senior Amy Murdoch is the Sweetgrass Society's president.
We got everything we asked for. Our main thing of what we wanted was to move forward in a positive change so that other Native American students and other minority students could come to Northern and not feel discrimination.
The complaint filed last year with the Montana Human Rights Bureau involved an outdoor staircase where campus student clubs paint various messages. In 2016, the Sweetgrass Society painted #NoDapple on the stairs to protest construction of the controversial Dakota Access Pipeline. MSU Northern determined the hashtag was vandalism and painted over the club steps. The American Civil Liberties Union of Montana took up the students' case. MSU Northern's Director of Indian Education, Margaret Campbell, describes the mediation process between the two sides as
one of the more emotional processes I've ever been involved in. But at the end of the day, what came out of that is that the chancellor and the Sweetgrass students have a much better relationship, a much healthier, reciprocal relationship.
The agreement announced this week requires the North Central Montana University to implement campus-wide diversity education and implicit bias training. For National Native News, I'm Edward O'Brien.
The U.S. Supreme Court Tuesday decided in favor of the Gun Lake Tribe in a land and trust dispute. A claimant challenged the Interior Department's authority to acquire land and trust for the Michigan Tribe. The years-long issue went to the Interior Department, Supreme Court, Congress, and back to the Supreme Court. The case affirms the tribe's right to its homelands and reinforces Congress's authority to pass laws to acquire land and trust for tribes. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service.
Support by the AAIP and Million Hearts Think Heart Symposium. Strategies for managing high blood pressure, March 14th in Oklahoma City. Registration deadline is March 5th at aaip.org/events.
When you file online for your PFD, every Alaskan can support great causes like National Native News. Just select KNBA-FM, Kewaunik Broadcast Corporation. With your support, you can help us make a difference in our community.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon. I'm your Wednesday host, Shelley Delaney, and with me in the studio is Lynn Shell. I always like to meet another Shell. Welcome to the show, Lynn.
Thank you.
Lynn, you're an artist based here in Juno. How would you describe your work?
I am a felter. I call myself a fabric artist, and I work with different fibers. I work with wool and silks mainly.
And how long have you been creating your fiber goods?
I've been working with felting since the early 90s. I've gone from wet felting to dry felting to needle felting, and with small projects and then on to bigger projects such as clothing and hats and scarves and other items to wear, as well as shoes and boots.
Fun. Do you feel like there's a resurgence going on with the fiber arts? I've seen a lot of new classes on it lately.
Well, I call it the utmost recycling art. And that's because you take wool first from an animal, and then you comb it, clean it, either spin it into wool or use it as plain felting fronds, and then you felt them with agitation, moisture, and heat to make it into a product. It's also a recycling project because I use recycled wool, such as sweaters and coats, skirts, anything that can be put in the wash and shrunk, which people call that felted, but that's really called fulling. When you take a wool item that is not meant to be washed and you put it in a washer under heat, agitation, and moisture, and then it becomes a tight weave that you can actually cut and use as material.
And what kind of fibers or materials do you really love to work with? Do you have a favorite?
Well, wool is the major felting fiber that you use, and then you can combine it with silk products so that you can felt the two together, and it makes some wonderful accents with different fibers of silk, and you can also weave in materials as long as you have enough felt fibers over the top of it to hold the item in place. It actually gravitates through. It's hard to do it without my hands showing, but you take a piece of material, such as silk, and then you put wool on the top of it, and the fibers actually go through the silk fiber, locking into the wool fibers on the other side, and it makes it then a full lock so that it's an item that can actually be cut, pulled. It's one of the strongest fibers in the world. In fact, yurts are made from wool, and the old way that they used to do the felting was to tie the wool around in a roll, then pull it behind a camel or another animal and let it run for a couple days, which is the agitation process, and the moisture comes from the ground, and that would make the wool, the loose wool fibers, into a material, and then they would make clothing and houses out of it.
Clothing and houses?
Yes.
That's so interesting. Do you work with any local animal fibers? There's, you know, there's musk oxen here. Sometimes I find clumps of mountain goat, you know, fleece around. Also, they're not local, but alpacas are pretty hot. It's a pretty hot topic. Anything like that?
I buy most of my wool from Palmer, and I get that from local sheep in that area. Muskox, it's you aren't allowed to pick it up. I was recently at the muskox farm in Palmer and thought, oh, here's some little pieces from the bushes, but that's against the law to take it because it is a protected animal, and they actually collect it off of the plants and the ground to sell it.
Yeah.
And I've never tried goat or anything else. I have tried alpaca, and it doesn't felt as well I haven't looked into why it is, but it has something to do with the follicle of the fiber. Because what happens to a piece of wool is that it's like a shingle on a roof. The fiber itself is straight, but then once you put it heat and moisture on it, the fibers separate and kind of fall down like if you were brushing a shingled roof backwards. Then when you agitate it, you are shortening the shaft of the fiber, and then all of those little shingles are lay back down and lock together and make it a shorter fiber. And that's what makes it into a material versus just a piece of yarn.
And you've also got your own business where folks can purchase your handmade work, and it's called Horse Island Trader. Is it actually located on Horse Island?
Yes, we live off the grid on Horse Island. We have a home with a generator, and we call it our cabin, but it's our primary home. And we have full facilities, and I love it there because we look straight across at the backside of Douglas and Mendenhall Glacier, and we're on Stevens Passage.
That's pretty exciting.
It is. It's a very easy place to become creative.
Yes, I can imagine.
Yes, very inspiring.
Great vibes. This First Friday, however, you don't have to go to Horse Island. You don't even have to go online. Your work will be available to see and feel and purchase at ShoeFly. Can you tell us about that?
Yes, ShoeFly, for the First Friday of every month, always features an artist. And they have given me that opportunity that I'm very excited about this year. So it'll be from 4 to 7 on Friday, March 2nd. And I am putting my items up for sale for 40% off as a gesture to the community, a thanks for their support with my art as I began my experience through felting. And you can also see a variety of things such as scarves, mittens, hats, jackets, many more things. Flowers, especially, that are being specially featured for hats and coats.
What did you say?
Flowers.
Flowers.
Yes.
Oh, yes. Well, it's almost that
bringing
time
on
of year.
Spring, right.
Yeah. And speaking of that, what sort of color palettes do you like to use in your creations?
Everything. Absolutely everything. I tend to like really vibrant colors, and I can
tell that just by looking at you.
Yes.
I often sometimes lament that the show is not televised because you're a very colorful character.
Well, I do love the vibrant colors, but I have to tone myself down very often for other people that like the more muted colors. So I try to go both ways. But my fascination with felting is the fact that you start out with a color palette, but once the fibers agitate and merge together, you never know what you're going to come out with. So it's really a very creative process that you don't have that much control with, which is kind of fun.
It kind of, the art guides you.
Absolutely.
Where it wants to go.
Yes. And if there's something in it that you don't like, you can cut it out and then refelt it a little bit, and it'll put a hole or a ball in your item, which gives it extra structure and depth.
What are some of your most popular items?
My felted mittens are real popular, and those I make out of recycled sweaters. Again, the ultimate recycling. You take a sweater and you make it into mittens. That and my hats have been really popular. I've been just introducing my flowers and my silk and wool scarves, so that's something new.
That's great. If you're just tuning in, I'm speaking with Lynn Schell. She's a featured artist this First Friday at ShoeFly, and she will be putting her fiber art creations on display for folks to look at and feel. I like to touch stuff like that,
yes.
Too. You got to feel if it's too scratchy for you or not. And that's at ShoeFly. ShoeFly is located downtown on Seward Street, and the show is tomorrow starting at 4, or no, sorry, it's Friday at 4 o'clock. Starting at 4 o'clock or 4:30?
4 o'clock to 7.
4 o'clock to 7 for First Friday. So if you're out and about, don't miss popping into ShoeFly and picking up some mittens or scarves or whatever your heart desires. Lynn, thanks so much for being here. And before you go, I wanted to ask about your website. Where can we find your stuff online?
Feltgood.org. Also, I do have a Facebook page, which is Horse Island Trader.
Great. All right. Well, thanks for being here, Lynn. Is there anything else you'd like to add?
No, but thank you very much for the opportunity, and I love the community of Juneau, and I thank them for their support.
Well, have a nice time on Horse Island next time you go back. I'm jealous.
Thank you.
Make a difference when they file online for their PFD. It's easy to share a little of your PFD with Southeast communities through Pick, Click, Give. There are dozens of nonprofits that you can support in Juneau alone, including KTOO Public Media. The application period for the PFD begins January 1st and runs through March 31st. More information can be found at pickclickgive.org.
KTOO is supported by listeners like you and by Breezin, where Chef Moorhead offers a large selection of hot breakfast items, burritos, and daily lunch and dinner menus for takeout at the Lemon Creek Breezin or online at breezin.com.
All right, dear. Mm-hmm. Here we go.
Never been to Folsom, but I've damn sure done my time trying to please a woman, trying to She washed her hands of our love. I went right straight down the drain.
All right, you're listening to A Juno Afternoon. I'm your host, Shelley Delaney, and here with me in the studio are two musicians that are playing a concert tonight. Kendall Marvel is the one we're listening to right now.
Cause I've done grown accustomed.
What's the name of the song, Kendall?
So down the like a
I like it.
Story of your life.
It is. Yeah.
And our other artist is the one and only Jeffrey Steele. Welcome, both of you, to the show.
Thank you.
Thanks very much.
First time in Juno?
Nope. I was here about 3 weeks ago with Daryl Worley.
Oh, wow.
We've done the same trick we're doing this week, so.
Oh, well, yeah. That's fantastic. Mm-hmm.
It's been about 25 years for me, so.
Cool. Well, we'll circle back to that. I like hearing about out-of-towners' experiences in Juno and in Alaska. But starting off, Mr. Steele, you're performing tonight, too. I'm a little in awe of all your accomplishments as a singer and a songwriter. The list is so long, it would take all of our time to read it. And everything on it was so impressive, I had a hard time, cherry-picking the highlights. But I'll try. So let's just start with the first one on the list. You were the lead singer for Boy Howdy, a country music band that got its start in the 1990s. Is that how you got your start as a songwriter?
I mean, that was probably when I first started to figure out that I loved writing songs. I wrote a lot of songs for the band. We had a couple of hits, and that's what kind of indirectly kind of brought me to Nashville. And when I saw Nashville, this whole town full of people creating songs, I just was mesmerized by it. And I literally couldn't wait to get out of the band and get into Nashville where all this crazy, creativity was going on and become a part of it. And then I ended up there, I think, it was probably early 93, 94 is when I've been coming there since the 80s. But that's when I finally settled down and said, okay, I'm going to take a shot at this and see what happens.
Have you always loved country music?
Yeah. I mean, I grew up in Los Angeles. So I grew up right in the middle of Hollywood playing in rock and roll bands. And stumbled into country music, got offered a job at a honky-tonk playing a bunch of Merle Haggard songs, and I fell in love with it when I was, I think, about 17, well, maybe 18 or 19. And I just wanted to figure out a way to bring my music, my rock and roll influences, and bring it into country. And I just wanted to figure out how to do it because all my friends that I played in bands with hated country music.
Really?
Country music sucks. And I said, I'm going to figure out a way to make country music people like that don't like country music. I think that was kind of in the back of my head. And that's the kind of what brought me to Nashville.
That's awesome. Interesting. I was going to ask about that. Why should people come to see you if they, if somebody doesn't like country music, what would you tell them to get them to come out to the concert tonight?
Yeah, well, it just rocks. I think as long as you capture the story you're trying to capture with country music, such a story-based format, I think you can get away with a little bit of, crazy rock and roll influences. That was my take back then anyway when I started doing this. I just think as long as the story's true, people will respect the songs. That was always kind of how I looked at it, as long as I really got the lyric right,
How about you, Kendall? How'd you get your start?
I moved to Nashville about 20 years ago. It was the summer of 98. I played in local bands. It was a big fish in a small pond and decided to get in the big pond. Actually wrote my first hit song the day that I moved to Nashville. Got really lucky. Apparently that don't happen very often. The next one was a little harder to get, but it took me a couple years for that one. I moved to town to be a singer. And then people started recording my songs, and my kids were little, and it seemed like the right thing to do at that time was just write songs for everybody else. So I done that for a while. Last year, decided to make a record of my own, and getting ready to go tour Europe and run around the world a little bit and do my own thing for a while. But I still write songs for other folks as well. So
that's exciting.
Mm-hmm.
And speaking of writing songs for other folks, Mr. Steele, you've written songs for just about every chart-topping country group that's out there. Some of them include Rascal Flatts, Faith Hill, Tim McGraw, Leanne Rimes. What would either of you say to an aspiring songwriter who'd like to achieve that level of success?
Show up.
I didn't mean for that to be funny.
I always say must be present to win because a lot of people, they want to send you songs on Facebook or something. You're like, man, I tried that. And I lived close to Nashville. I was from about 3 hours from there. I was like, as I said a while ago, I said, you don't have to if you want to be a good golfer, you can't golf once a week. You got to do it every day. You know what I mean? Them guys practice all the time. So if you're gonna if you're aspiring to do it, you got to go to where it's happening: Nashville, Austin, New York, L.A., Atlanta, Miami, whatever your genre of music is, you know, wherever that's predominant. You got to be there. You got to be in the thick of things to make things happen.
I think, too, like, just like you never look up. You know, a few years ago I got, you know, put into the Songwriter Hall of Fame, and it was the first time I think I really stopped and went, wow, you know, I didn't realize how many years had passed and how much work I was doing. I just never looked up, you know, and because I loved it. You know, I just loved doing it, and that was always the main drive for me. Is, you know, that's what we get in there. It's just so much fun. I still can't believe I get to do it. It's like a joke. It's like a you know, like a secret joke. Like,
you're gonna pay us.
Yeah, they're gonna pay me money to make stuff rhyme. You know, I know how to do that. You know, so you know what I mean. So it still has that kind of like teenage childhood charm about it, of the dream of like, you know, all I got to do is figure out how to get this right. That's this excitement about it that's still there all these years later. I think that's what has always kept me inspired. You know.
Your work is your joy.
Yeah,
that's right. That's
as
right.
It should be, right? One
Absolutely.
Life, man.
And it hasn't
Have
worn
fun.
Off yet. You mentioned you were added to the Songwriters Hall of Fame. That was in 2013. What did that mean to you? How did it feel?
It was unbelievable. It's still hard to wrap my head around. But at the time, it was like, wait a minute, I'm still doing this.
I didn't know you was that old, Jeffrey.
Yeah, neither did I. I was like, I'm not done yet. You know, I'm still doing this. But it's quite an honor. And I think the main thing was for people that are trying to get into it. You know, I always kind of did what I did. You know what I mean? I always did what I did.
You know, that's really cool about Jeffrey, too. Usually when people get into Songwriters Hall of Fame, they're on the backside of their career. You know, a lot of those guys hadn't had a hit in a while. They had a great track record before that, but sometimes what they do kind of falls out of favor. Ain't been the case with Jeffrey at all. You know, he's still cranking out hits all the time.
And
staying fresh.
Yeah, speaking of hits, you wrote the song "I Thought I Lost You" for the Disney Pixar film Bolt. What was that experience like? Had you worked on film scores or movie soundtracks
before?
Yeah,
I have. Miley Cyrus. I've known Miley since she was a little kid, you know, and at that part of her career, she was coming out of the Hannah Montana show and trying to, you know, broaden her horizons or whatever. So she got picked to star in this movie with John Travolta. It's an animated movie, and they wanted her to come up with a song. So she said, well, I want to write this with my friend Jeffrey Steele, and which I was just blown away by the fact that – because they wanted something that fit a certain type of thing for the movie. And so it's a funny story that the producer ended up flying out to Nashville, the producer of the movie, on a Learjet. He came over to my little studio and he brought me a black and white version of the movie with just a storyboard, like no animation. It was just storyboard. And he said, now how do you do this? I said, well, just play this thing and let's just watch it. Let me just watch the movie. And so we literally made some popcorn and we sat on my couch and we were watching this kind of not animation, but just like drawings. And then all the script going by. And at some point in the movie, About two-thirds of the way through the movie, Miley's character finds John Travolta's character, which is the dog, and she says, I thought I lost you. And I looked over at the guy and go, that's the title of the song right there. And he goes, what? I go, that's it right there. Just turn the movie off. And I knew right then that was a chorus. I could write that chorus. And so I wrote the chorus that night. And then the next day, Miley came over, and she only had like a couple hours because she was, you know, just doing all of her stuff. And she came in and she was great, and I played it for her, and we wrote the verses, and then I just produced the track on it, and the next thing we know, it's, you know, getting all these award nominations and stuff. But it was so much fun. It was a real – because it's a real different animal, obviously. To write for a movie is so specific, and like, I think what Kendall and I, we kind of like to write what we write, you know, and when you have to like really write streamline for a specific project, you have to stay on it. You can't veer from it. You got to keep the movie in mind, what's going on in the movie.
That seems harder to me. It seems like it'd be a little harder.
It was challenging, but when I heard that line, I said, oh my God, this makes it, I thought I lost you. That's exactly what this movie's about. She thought she lost a dog and the dog came back, and you know, that was kind of how it went. That turned into a whirlwind of, like, you know, going out and hanging out in Hollywood with all the, you know, because it got nominated for the Golden Globes and the Academy Award and all that stuff. And, you know what I mean? So we got to hang out. Like, our song was nominated. I'm hanging out with Peter Gabriel and Sting and Springsteen, who had all these songs nominated in movies. I'm like, okay, yeah, we're going to win.
That's cool company right there.
Yeah, but it was fun.
You know, those are things that for guys like us, I mean, it's pretty insane. You know,
rare for guys like us.
Yeah, and you just remember how lucky you were to have this job again. You know,
yeah,
you know,
it's awesome.
All right. Well, that's enough gushing from me. Thank you for those stories. That's pretty terrific.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about what you'll be doing tonight at the concert.
We'll be doing songs that we've written for other folks and songs that we've recorded for our records and, you know, kind of telling stories behind them, bantering back and forth. You know, it's fun to do shows with guys like Jeffrey. We don't do a lot of shows together. We write songs together.
It's been a while since we played a show together.
I'm looking forward to it. But,
yeah,
we just, you know, tell stories and make jokes and poke fun of each other and do our versions of some songs you'll know or they'll know and some they probably won't know. But if you've never been to them kind of acoustic songwriter rounds, that's what they're called, a songwriter round, they're pretty interesting. Most folks leave there. They come there not knowing what to expect, but 99% of the folks who come to those are like, I can't wait to come to one of those again. It's like, so different than anything else.
Wait a minute. So that guy wrote the song that Chris Stapleton's singing? It's like, yeah, that guy wrote it. That's the guy that made it up. And that's a whole other – and when you're watching in the audience, I think it's the coolest thing when people kind of put the two and two together. And sometimes the stories are more entertaining than the freaking songs.
Yeah, a lot of times, yeah, exactly.
So, and what can you tell us about the concert series, Northern Lights Country Concert Series? Is this something that either of you have been a part of before?
It's my first time.
Yeah, I've done it. I done it last year. Me and Danny Myrick and Keith Anderson came up here. We didn't do Juno last year. Last month we done the first one. It was me and Daryl Worley, and this is the last one I'll do this year. But I started an event with Brad Erickson, who helps put this on in Anchorage about 6 or 7 years ago, called the Backyard Barbecue. And it's an acoustic thing, and we've brought up Jake Owen and Brothers Osborne, Lee Bryce, Dustin Lynch, a bunch of our buddies, and we just do this same kind of thing in Anchorage. So we're trying to expand it out and hit some of the smaller markets in Alaska, some of the smaller, cooler ones, actually, because I would love to come to Juneau in the summertime and check it out. I know it's a real artsy, cool community. It's different than the bigger Anchorage, you know, than the metropolitan areas. I'd love to come to some here in Ketchikan, some of these smaller areas. So we're trying to just venture out a little bit and bring it to some other folks.
Oh, they would love to have you, as we love to have you. We got a lot of arts and music in this town, but we are a little bit starved for some of the bigger names, so it's a real treat to have you guys come through.
Oh, it's a treat for us to get to come
here. It's an honor to have you on a Juneau afternoon. All right, the concert, which is the second concert in this series of four, from what I understand, the Northern Lights Country Concert Series. It starts tonight at 7 o'clock. It will take place at Centennial Hall. Tickets are still available?
Yes. Our friend Ken Peltier, who is a Alaskan native, he is pretty popular in the Anchorage, Fairbanks area. He'll be opening the shows. He starts at 7, and he's really good, too. Great guy. And come check him out. Come early.
All right. And where can we get a hold of tickets? I know they're on brown paper tickets. Is that the best place to get them?
You're asking the wrong guy about
that. Okay. I thought I'd ask because that's the only place I saw them.
Musicians hear that stuff and are like, huh, what? Foreign language.
Yeah.
But I thought there might be an agent or something in the room with us,
he's
too.
But he's over there.
Well, this town is pretty good about finding tickets. You know, we always say tickets are available in all the usual locations. And as long as you're not brand new to town, you know what that means.
Right.
So I'm sure they'll track them down. Thanks again for being here. Is there anything else you'd like to add?
I'm good.
Just come on out. Come on out and see us. I mean, guys like Jeffrey, you know, like I said, I've come up here a lot in Alaska the last 5 or 6 years, so I get to come a lot. But guys like Jeffrey don't come through town every day. So
that's right.
You need to come check him out if you don't have anything going on. Even if you do have something going on, cancel your plans and come on out.
All right. That's a great note to go out on, and we're going to play one from Jeffrey Steele. This track is called What Hurts the Most.
Thank you. this empty house, that don't bother me. I can take a few tears now and then and just let them out. I'm not afraid to cry every once in a while, even though going on with your gone still upsets me. There are days every now and again I pretend I'm okay, but that's not what gets me.
The Alaska State Museum's solo artist exhibition series continues with Ebb and Flow, landscape paintings of hushed stillness by award-winning Alaskan artist Linda Infante-Lyons. An opening reception will be held first Friday, March 2nd, starting at 4:30, with an artist's talk starting that evening at 7. The exhibition will continue till May 5th. For more information, go to museums.alaska.gov.
Support for KTO comes from listeners like you and from Wild Oven, delivering freshly baked bread to Foodland, Super Bear, and Rainbow Foods. Wild Oven, baking handmade organic sourdough in Juneau. More information at facebook.com/wildoven.
You're tuned into a Juneau Afternoon. It's about 21 minutes to the top of the hour, and my next guest is Cherry Eklund, here representing Juneau Education Association. Welcome to the show.
Well, thank you.
And your other claim to fame is that you're a teacher at Harborview.
Yes.
Must be a great job.
Yeah, I teach first grade, and it's exciting every day.
First grade, that must be a fun age to teach.
It is very exciting. It's so fun because kids are learning to read and just all the new discoveries every day.
We all remember our first grade teachers.
I hope they're good memories. I'm trying to make them good memories.
Yeah, mine are at any rate. I have great memories of a lot of my teachers, you know. You guys just you're such a powerful influence in children's lives. I hope that you're getting all the recognition and support that you deserve.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
This, Go ahead.
So you're here today to talk about Read Across America. What is that, for starters?
So Read Across America is National Education Association had an idea to promote reading, to make it like a big celebration. And so each year, the Juneau Education Association, which is our local chapter of teachers, we do a community-wide celebration just to promote reading. And we try to make it like a kind of a birthday party. March 2nd is Dr. Seuss's birthday, so we always do it around that time. So Saturday, March 3rd, from 10 to noon is the day.
Do you know how old he would have been this year?
I don't. Do you?
I didn't look it up. But, you know, also I have fond memories of Dr. Seuss growing up. What was your favorite Dr. Seuss book?
I loved Green Eggs and Ham.
Yeah. Classic.
It is. And it's the first book I really remember reading as a child where I could independently read. And I think that's what's so magical about Dr. Seuss is a lot of kids have a memory of playing with the words he created, invented, and he invented characters and just had a lot of humor. And so I think a lot of people have memories of Dr. Seuss. We'll be celebrating at this celebration. We'll have birthday cakes. We'll have guest readers. There's going to be crafts and face painting. It's just supposed to be happy, cheerful, fun, family fun, just like Dr. Seuss would want it to be. So.
And how did it come about that Dr. Seuss's birthday is when Read Across America is celebrated?
It's been around for years, and a lot of people actually celebrate it on his birthday. I think just because he began writing his books as a friend challenged him. He thought early readers were kind of boring for children, and so a friend challenged him to write a book using like 100 words, no more. And that's kind of how he first created his book. And so a lot of his books are around kids learning to read with his books. And so I think that's why they chose Dr. Seuss. But there are certainly lots of excellent authors out there that this day could be built around. And it's not just about Dr. Seuss. It's really about learning to read and promoting reading in families.
So what do we need to do if we want to participate?
Just come on down. It's free for everyone. It's at Juneau Douglas High School. There'll be cake. There's a free book for all children who come. We'll walk away with a free book.
What's the book?
They'll get to pick their own. So
oh, okay.
There's literally hundreds of books to choose from, and they'll each child will get to choose a book to take home with them and read with their family. And we have lots of guest readers lined up. The JDHS high school basketball team always comes and reads to children, and we have adult guest readers that are coming.
What books will they be reading?
Well, we let kids have a choice. They'll read some Dr. Seuss books, but they'll have a basket of books, and kids get to choose what books they want to hear, and there'll be lots of opportunities for that. That's face painting's always big, too. Kids walk away with their face painted, and it's just a fun time.
It sounds like a fun time. It sounds like it's going to be great. And when is this taking place again?
It is from 10 to noon on Saturday, March 3rd, and it's free.
Wow. Free cake, free face painting, free books. It's what a great party. Best party ever.
Yes. Dr. Seuss would probably want to be there himself.
Oh, I'm certain that he would. And have you been involved with this event in the past?
I have. There's a committee of teachers that organize it, and I've been on the committee for the past several years. It's one of my favorite things.
Yeah. Do you get a big turnout every year?
Yes. So the last couple of years it's been at the Valley Public Library, and that's this year it's a change of venue just because they have a great STEM activity set up in the library, so the venue wasn't available.
Right.
But it'll still be, no matter where it's at, lots of fun things to do, and we're hoping that everybody will come down to the high school.
Great. You're just joining me. I'm speaking with Cherry Eklund, and she's representing the Read Across America celebration at JDHS. It's free. It's open to the public. It's this Saturday at 10 a.m. Is there anything else you'd like to add? Where can we find out more information about this?
There are posters and flyers, I think, around town and at different schools. It is from 10 to noon. You don't have to be there the whole time. So if your schedule is come at 11, come at 10:15, and you just come and go at your leisure, what fits your family schedule. We know people are very busy.
Mm-hmm.
So stop on by at any time between 10 and noon.
Great. Anything else?
No, thanks, and we hope to see everybody there.
All right. Well, thank you too, Cherry, for coming.
Bird note. Here and there along winter shorelines, both on the Pacific and Atlantic, little flocks of pale, silvery shorebirds probe at the water's edge, keeping pace with each wave's ebb and flow. These small sandpipers are called sanderlings. Rachel Carson, whose book Under the Sea Wind set a high standard for nature writing, described sanderlings as running with a twinkle of black feet. Carson depicted sanderlings foraging along the beach as keeping in the thin film at the edge of the ebbing surf, where puffs of blown spume or sea froth rolled like thistledown. Sanderlings also winter in the Hawaiian Islands. In the native language, they are known as hunakai, or sea foam, an apt description of the sandpiper's pale winter plumage and their nimble dance with the waves. In the warmer months, sanderlings nest in the extreme north, most north of the Arctic Circle, in remote sites in Canada, Greenland, and Siberia. In winter, however, they spread out as far as any bird in the world. Their silvery flocks are sprinkled along beaches throughout the temperate and tropic zones, on 6 of the 7 continents. For Bird Note, I'm Mary McCann. Bird Note listeners are taking a once-in-a-lifetime journey to the Galapagos, and you can join us in July 2018. Trip details and more at birdnote.org.
Hi, this is Amanda Flory. I host Soundings every Wednesday at 10 a.m. on KRNN. I listen to KRNN because of all the great jazz and blues music and all the great DJ hosts that help put KRNN together. Tune into KRNN at 102.7.
Well, you're crazy about love, and I'm crazy about love myself.
Hey there, KTOO fans. This is Paula Poundstone of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. I'm heading to Juneau to do a special performance for the station this March 8th at Centennial Hall. The show starts at 7 p.m. Tickets are going fast, so don't miss out. Get yours at ktoo.org, the station, and the Jack.
Woo-da hoo-da!
You're tuned in to a Juno Afternoon, and it's about 11 minutes, the top of the hour. My next guest is Jeffra Clow with our weekly Eagle Crest update. Welcome back, Jeffra.
Thanks, Shelley, and what a beautiful day.
I know you're in a good mood.
Oh,
we've
yeah.
We've got so much snow the last 2 weeks.
So much snow the last couple of weeks. So it is really nice. And I'm really excited to report that starting tomorrow, we're will either return or start our normal operating. I can't quite figure out the proper way to say that, but we'll be open Thursday through Monday and off on Tuesdays and Wednesdays. Starting tomorrow, we'll have Porcupine, Hooter, and Ptarmigan open from 9 to 4.
Cool.
So we're coming up on spring here soon. Our days are longer, so our lift hours switch.
So we've got a bunch of snow up there. How are conditions?
Conditions are good. That snow that we've gotten the last two big storms have really helped us out a lot. We're able to get the snowcats up and do a little bit more grooming on the lower mountain. And I haven't had a chance to chat with anybody, but I think the goal was they were going to try and see if they could get up a little more on the upper mountain, too. So, you know, I think one thing I just want to remind everyone, we don't have as much snow as we normally do this time of year. And I think when you get out there on the mountain, you kind of go, oh, yeah, we don't. But we're certainly doing really good. We're much better than we were a week ago, and we're smiling.
What's your advice to riders who want to take on some of the bigger runs?
I would just use caution. There's just like every season, but this season more so, it seems like there's marked and unmarked obstacles. And things may appear white, but then there's not a whole lot of white. And then you might hit dirt, rock, and ground. So, you know, just use caution. Use your head and look ahead and, you know, make sure that you know where you're going and what you're skiing over.
Weather for the next couple of days is going to be clear and colder, and also we're under a high wind advisory or high wind warning starting, I think it's starting soon until tomorrow night. So
right.
How does that affect the skiing?
You know, sometimes
on the
we'll get some wind up there, and it may affect us. As an example, on Monday we did find ourselves on wind hold with that storm that came in. So it depends upon the direction. It depends upon the speed. So we'll watch it. We'll post updates on our website, also on social media, on Facebook and Twitter. So right now we're just anticipating just a fabulous sunny weekend. Usually that wind doesn't affect us too much down on the lower mountain. So we're going to have a great time. The snow bus will run Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. So you can find that bus schedule at skijuno.com. And we've got lessons, we've got snow, and promises to be a great weekend up on the mountain.
Well, that's good news. I'm so glad this winter has turned around finally, and Father Winter has blessed us with his bounty.
Yes, Father Winter and, you know, Mother Nature got together there, apparently made it reconciled. And so it looks like March is going to be a great ski and snowboard month. So we're happy, and you can find out all the information about Eagle Crest at skijuno.com.
Great. Well, usually you're here promoting some kind of event or another, but I think this weekend it's just get your ski on.
This weekend it's get your ski on, get your snowboard on. Don't stay away. We've got lessons. We're going to have great time up on the mountain. So it's a great time to get up there and make some turns. So hopefully everybody comes up and joins us on the mountain.
You know I'll be trying to.
All right. We'll see you there.
All right. Thanks, Jeffra. See you next week.
All right. Thanks, Shelley.
So I packed my things and ran, far away from all the trouble I had caused with my two hands. Alone we traveled on with nothing but a shadow. We fled far away.
Hold your horses now,
until the sun goes down.
Made me wonder about their past. And as I looked around, I began to know.
You're tuned into a Juno Afternoon. I'm your host, Shelley Delaney. And just in case you haven't heard, we will be hosting Paula Poundstone next week about a week from tomorrow on March 8th at Centennial Hall. We still have lots of tickets available, and we thought we'd give you a little taste of Paula's brand of comedy today. So this next bit coming up is called Aging Process. Enjoy.
Understand the aging process. I really don't. I mean, I'm starting to feel it for sure, and I'm not liking it one bit. And I don't understand it. I mean, so much in nature is perfect, and so much in nature has a great reason. You know, little mysteries that we might not understand right away, but then when you figure it out, you're like, oh my God, that's perfect. You know, little survival things. For example, like a baby's cry is very piercing, and it's hard to turn away from. It's nature's way of providing for the baby. It's brilliant. You know, butterflies, they sometimes have big circles on their wings so they look like eyes and it frightens away birds. Dumb birds, I think, but still. But the aging process, it doesn't make any sense. I don't understand what the things are for. I mean, I understand we can't go on forever, and that's fine with me. But do we have to crawl to the finish line? Can't we just pick a day and kick? That would be okay with me. So much of what happens along the way doesn't make any sense in terms of nature. Like, okay, like I have these creases here near my eyebrows at the top of my nose. What the hell is that for? What is that, to frighten birds? Why would I have that? I see no benefit in a thing like that. It's just so mean somehow. And I understand it's because I've squinted a lot. Okay, I gather that. Fine, but I squinted when I was a kid. It didn't stay there. Why is it you get to an age where you have to keep a perfect record of every facial expression you've ever had? It just seems cruel somehow. I don't know, different things. Like, okay, for example, I'm 48 and I can't see anymore. What's the point of that? Why would that help the world? How does that fit into a circle of life of nature? Me bonking into things. And I won't get glasses. I don't have the money to get. I'm not getting glasses. Besides, I'm 48. I know where everything is.
Hi, this is a little sample from Paula Poundstone. We are hosting her March 8th at Centennial Hall, 7 p.m. Tickets are still available. Doors open at 6:30. That's about a week from tomorrow. So check it out. Thanks for tuning in to a Juno Afternoon today. On tomorrow's show, Julie Copins will host. Jim Powell will be here with details about the Arctic Winter Games. Enrique Bravo from Perseverance Theater will offer a preview of Spring Break on stage. We'll learn about the Jetty with Dana Herndon. And Nancy DeCherney will be back with Arts Up. That's tomorrow live at 3 on KTOO. Jeff Brown is the producer, and I'm your host, Shelley Delaney. Today's show will be available on demand online at ktoo.org. Until tomorrow, this has been a Juno Afternoon. Have a great Juno evening.
Listen to the engine whine. I am going to make it through this year. If it kills me.